Have you ever thought about the approved manners in which sometimes it's good to be clever, good to be sly? Words that we might generally associate, and most of the time associate with something sinful. How about a time to be crafty? Well, generally, if you say someone's being sly or crafty, you think something bad, don't you? Well, I've got a lesson of thought-producing stuff today. He that handleth a matter wisely is going to be the subject that we cover today. And I want to start in Proverbs chapter 16. And I want to talk about situations. Sometimes situations arise where how you handle it is very important. And I got you in Proverbs 16 to think about rulers, for example. And Proverbs 16, verses 14 and 15 says, "The wrath of a king is a messenger of death, but a wise man will pacify it. And the light of this king's countenance is life, and the in his favor is the cloud of later rain." So think about that. A wise man will pacify a king's wrath. You know, if you think about, if you've paid attention to our local politicians, our county judge has a little power appetite, and that might be an understatement. And you've heard of the phrase, "Don't poke the bear," right? So let's say, now thankfully at this moment, we're protected under state law, but that hadn't mattered much in recent months until it had to go to court. So let's just say illustratively, the judge says, "The greatest spread of COVID-19 happens over Christmas," because that's pretty much what he's been saying about every holiday. And he says, "So from Friday till Monday, December 25th till that Monday, you're only allowed to go to the grocery store or the hospital, and all other services are shut down." Now, this might ring a bell to you a little bit, because temporarily we were under a similar restriction. And recall, we talked about how we were going to assemble. God still wants us to assemble. One of the suggestions I made was plan to go to the grocery store. Actually, go to the grocery store so that if you got pulled over, you're really going to the grocery store. Well, I know people that would say, "That's lying." Is it? I'm going to the grocery store. And people say, "Well, you're playing games with the truth." I want to present a lesson today to make us think about times where we have to stand and tell everything, and times where we really ought to be crafty, where we all really ought to think things through. Now, using this illustration of a king, of a ruler, what if the king and the ruler says, at the sound of the blowing of a trumpet or a sackbut or a psaltery or whatever, you're going to bow down and worship these idols that I've put up? Well, we might try to avoid wherever that's going on. That would be being sly, right? If you know, everybody in downtown El Paso is going to have to bow down to this idol every day at this time, well, guess where we're not going to be that day at that time. But let's say you got called up for jury duty on that day at that time. There's no way to get around it. You're going to have to be in that area of town for whatever reason. Jury duty in this case. What are you going to do? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in Daniel 3, what did they do? They refused to bow down to that idol. Now, the opportunity to pacify the king is gone. You're put in a situation where you have to take a stand. And God, of course, in many passages, right? Exodus 20, 1 through 5, Exodus 34, verse 14, things we know, Exodus 34, 14, "Thou shalt worship no other God, the Lord, who is a jealous God." We know we can't do that. And we know there's a time in Proverbs 28, verse 1, that the wicked flee when man no man pursueth. but the righteous is bold as a lion. There's a time to be bold. And you don't want to go poke the bear. You don't want to find out what that hot, fiery furnace that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego went through in Daniel chapter 3. But sometimes it's inescapable. Sometimes there's no way to get around it. But what if you could? Shouldn't we try our best to pacify the king's wrath without compromising the truth? Shouldn't we attempt, in our case, not to poke the judge before he does something crazy? If you're still in the book of Proverbs, chapter 19, verse 12, says the king's wrath is as the roaring of a lion, but his favor is as dew upon the grass. What do I want to be in? I don't want to be under his wrath. I want to be under his favor. In the next chapter, in Proverbs chapter 20, verse 2, the fear of a king is the roaring of a lion. Whoso provoketh him to anger sinneth against his own soul. So what do I not want to do? I don't want to go to his house and tell him, hey, I saw your press conference where you said, we're only allowed... Well, I'm going to tell you something, buddy. I'm going to worship the Lord my God on the first day of the week at 8625 Robert Drive out northeast El Paso. There's never not a thing you can do about it. Huh. What do you think is going to be waiting for us Sunday morning out here at this building? County sheriff, maybe the city police, depends if Margo and him are getting along at the time or whatever the case may be. Somebody. What do you think is going to happen? He's going to flex those muscles. Why do I want to go poke him? I'm not required at that time to poke him. I'm seeing that it's wise not to. In Proverbs 28, verse 15, this is as a roaring lion or a raging bear, so is a wicked ruler over the poor people. So if you're out on a hike, I don't think there's anywhere around here where we're going to find lions if we're out hiking. But mountain lions or bear, if you're out hiking on the Franklin Mountains, you could see either of the two. If you noticed they had cubs, are you going to keep going in that direction? Or are you going to avoid it? In fact, how are you going to avoid it? Aren't you going to try to be slick? I mean, you're not just going to start running down that trail. You're going to try to back off and kind of creep around the bushes and be smart, because you know that mama bear or that mountain lion is going to defend its young very aggressively. And unless you're carrying a firearm and you're very good with it, and maybe not even then, depending on what kind of firearm you're carrying. If you're carrying a handgun against a bear, you might be in trouble. Well, what are you going to do? You're going to try to be slick. You're going to try to get away. Why does the Lord use these illustrations to get upon us? Besides the fact, aren't we commanded in Romans 12, 18 through 21, as much as possible to live peaceably with all men? We're instructed that, right? We're instructed to obey civil government, 1 Peter 2, 13 through 17. So I don't want to provoke our rulers in any way that's going to get us in trouble. Think about that. Think about how that might, and we're going to get into to some things throughout this lesson to add to this thought a little bit. But think about how I might know how, think about the word manipulate. Think about the word manipulate. When you think of somebody that manipulates something, is that generally a good thought? Not normally, right? But if we could manipulate civil law to obey God at the same time, what are we going to do? Right? So, as a blanket statement, and I'm going to wait all the way to the end of the lesson, but as a blanket statement, is it sinful to be crafty, to be sly, at times to be subtle? Most cases you can think of, the work of the devil is subtle. So those terms are negative. But is there a time where we need to be ourselves slick or sly about something? If we know some investigation is about to happen, to avoid it, where it might bring us under persecution. So here's the thought as we go forward, and I'm going to build on this. Have that question in your mind. Have that thought process in your mind. Look over at Ephesians chapter 5. We're instructed by God, so however you want to phrase that, a command to walk in wisdom. It says in Ephesians 5:15 through 17, "See then that you walk circumspectly," which means diligently or perfectly, "not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Wherefore, be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is." How do we accomplish that? How is that put in place? How much does that require situational awareness? Where we're living, what's going on at this time in life, and what we might face in relation to it. I remember when we were studying the book of Daniel, and I remember Jeff's brother was sitting behind him at that time. So I'm looking over here, thinking of everyone that was here. And Marcus was here then, and he asked a question during the class. But we were talking about, and this was prior to COVID. What if the government said we can't assemble? And we went through the very scenario of how, well, we'd have to, like in Acts chapter 8, where they scattered, we'd have to do it under concealment. We might have to hide, where little did we know that we were going to actually be employing that tactic not long after we had that discussion. Nobody foresaw this is actually about to happen. But we were talking about, you know, in the book of Daniel, what happens if we were forbidden? We were in Daniel 6, talking about Daniel because the law was passed where he wouldn't be able to pray to God. And he did it anyway. What would we do? And we're talking about a difference between us and Daniel. Daniel did it with his windows open, but the Lord wants us to be wise, to not be put under a light of an examination. And we're talking about the difference there in how God would want us to act versus how the prophet acted there in the first century. Situations. Look at Amos chapter 5. Amos chapter 5 verses 10 through 13 says, "They hate him that rebuketh in the gate, and they abhor him that speaketh uprightly. Forasmuch therefore as your treading is upon the poor, and you take from him burdens of wheat, ye have built houses of hewn stone, but ye shall not dwell in them. Ye have planted pleasant vineyards, but ye shall not drink wine of them. For I know your manifold transgressions and your mighty sins. They afflict the just, they take a bribe, they turn aside the poor and the gate from the right. Therefore the prudent shall keep silence in that time, for it is an evil time." Is there a time not to speak up? A time not to stand out? A time not to be brought under the light of investigation? Yeah, there is. There's a time not to advertise, "Hey, I'm over here, come get me." But rather to practice discretion. Even as a child of God who needs to be a light in the world, but sometimes needs to direct that light away from the eyes that are looking to identify it for evil purposes. That takes awareness of your surroundings, of your situation. Example, if you were to go to communist China as a child of God and you had a desire to teach somebody, I knew a man years ago that went to China, and he had to hide his Bible when he went into China. And he had some crafty ways. I can't remember them all. But some of it was a book cut out, and he had pages of the Bible pasted in like a regular novel, etc. And he was going over there to try to teach. But Christians can't publicly assemble. So everything was done very discreetly. So when you pass through customs and you're declaring something, you're going to say, "Yeah, I've got my Bible between pages 3 and 36 of this book." No. What if the Chinese government starts inquiring of you? You're going to have to practice discretion. You're going to have discreet, wise ways in which you answer those questions. Look at the book of Micah chapter 7. I say that because I would have said, I can't foresee a time in my lifetime where America might forbid the Scriptures. But here recently, I'm not so sure I can say that anymore. So these are thoughts we need to have in mind. We need to think about how, unfortunately, in our lifetimes, we may have to be discreet in our practice of the faith under certain lights of examination. Micah chapter 7, a sad statement. Woe is me, for I am as when they have gathered the summer fruits, and as the grape gleaning of the vintage, there is no cluster to eat. My soul desired the first ripe fruit. The good man is perished out of the earth, and there is none upright among men. Just stop here for a minute. You know this is hyperbole. This is exaggerated statement because we know there's always been a remnant, right? Romans 11, 1 through 5. It's always important to remember that when we're studying scriptures like this. Like Paul uses a statement like that in Romans 3. There's always a remnant. So back to this. The point is, Micah's at a time where it's very hard to find faithful people. That's the point. He says, they all lie in wait for blood. They hunt every man his brother with a net. They may do evil with both hands earnestly. The prince asketh and the judge asketh for a reward. The great man, he uttereth his mischievous desire. So they wrap it up. The best of them is as a briar. The most upright is sharper than a thorn hedge. The day of the watchman and the visitation cometh. Now shall be their perplexity. Trust ye not in a friend, but put confidence in a God. Keep the doors of thy mouth from her that lieth in thy bosom. For the son dishonors the father, the daughter rises up against her mother, the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies are men of his own house. Right? Jesus used that in Luke 12 and 21, right? So, familiar statement. Verse 7, therefore, I will look unto the Lord, I will wait for the God of my salvation. My God will hear me. So when you're reading about times like that, you know discretion is of a necessity. Maybe even among family members where people are turning on one another and bringing great harm. There has to be great wisdom in situations. And not just in times of persecution, but in general, wisdom about a situation. Let me give this. Look, we're all familiar with Matthew 7, verse 6. Give not that which is holy to the dog, neither cast your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under feet and turn again and rend you. Let me give you a more uncommon passage. Look at Proverbs 29, verse 9. What about some of the discussions that people may try to draw us into? And maybe they're biblical discussions. Maybe they're spiritual discussions. Proverbs 29, verse 9. If a wise man contendeth with a foolish man, whether he rage or laugh, there is no rest or there is no quietness. Don't you know there's some people you don't want to engage with? That you're not going to have peace if you do that? That they're going to bring a great deal of strife into your life? So wisdom says, I'm not going to engage. Or how about when you evaluate a situation and you know there's no favorable outcome? For example, when you study Proverbs chapters 4, 5, 6, the warnings of those chapters are about men avoiding strange women. And let me give you a couple of statements out of that. So, in the book of Proverbs, but for example, in chapter 5, verses 20 through 23, why will thou, my son, be ravished with a strange woman and embrace the bosom of a stranger? For the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he pondereth all his going. His own iniquity shall take the wicked himself, and he shall be holden with the cords of his sin. He shall die without instruction, and the greatness of his folly he shall go astray. So, hey, what strange women going to lead me to? Destruction. And the context talks about how they set traps for men that are unaware, and so forth and so on. And even as you go into chapter 7, and it talks about a woman who's watching through her window and how she's perfumed her bed and made it ready. So really, Proverbs 5, 4, 5, 6, 7, what's wisdom teaching? Be aware of these women that could be out to harm. I feel sorry for single men today. You don't even know if you're talking to a woman. It's like, what are you going to need? Some kind of DNA test before you start dating going into the future? Especially since people think that sex changes are even okay for children to go through. So, what's the future behold? Well, what the book of Proverbs teaches us is to be aware of the eye candy. Be aware of people that are setting you up. So that situational awareness, I've got wisdom to avoid that there are people out there. There are men and women. Here it's in the sense of women, but there are men and women. They're traps. Don't fall into them. Now, our lesson comes from Proverbs 16, 20 through 22. Where we read, "He that handleth a matter wisely shall find good, and whoso trusts in the Lord, happy is he. The wise in heart shall be called prudent, and the sweetness of his lip increases learning. Understanding is a wellspring of life unto him that hath it, but the instructions of fool is folly." And when I was thinking about these passages, mostly verse 20, I wasn't actually preparing a lesson or thinking about anything. I was thinking about the Apostle Paul. And I was, in my own personal studies, just looking at the relationship that Paul had with the church in Corinth. Here was a brother that cared deeply about these saints, but it wasn't given back to him in that manner. And thought about how they talked bad about him behind his back, how they really despised him, how false teachers even used that to prop themselves up in a better way to be able to take advantage of it. And I want you to turn over to 2 Corinthians chapter 12. And I want you to look at Paul and think about how we can be lawfully crafty, or what that word means is clever, and how we can use guile, which is craft or subtlety, from what Paul is saying with godly wisdom and how he handled the matter. So in 2 Corinthians 12, beginning at verse 11, and what you have contextually really goes back to chapter 10, where people were making accusations against him, basically insinuating that he was carnal. He had to answer how we walk not according to the flesh, and then go through about how not to measure yourself by yourself or others by yourself, not to glory in yourself. In 2 Corinthians 11, he says he was speaking as a fool as he went through in detail, because they were caught up in the admiration of men. So he spoke as a fool about the things that he suffered for Christ, how he's not behind the very chief apostles. Look at all the things that he suffered. And he said, "I'm speaking as a fool." Well, here in 2 Corinthians 12, 11 through 21, "I am become a fool in glorying." That's tying back to that in chapter 11. "Ye have compelled me, for I ought to have been commended of you. For in nothing am I behind the very chiefest apostles, though I be nothing. Truly the signs of an apostle were wrought among you in all patience and signs and wonders and mighty deeds. For where is it wherein you were inferior to other churches, except it be that I myself was not burdensome to you? Forgive me of this wrong." Now that's a key to this passage, to what I'm going to draw upon. I want to lay it out and then let you read it as we go through. Paul knew when he was among the church in Corinth, the saints in Corinth, that they were looking for reason. They were looking for a way to make accusation. So he chose not to take any wages from them. He chose to work, to labor with his own hands, so that they couldn't make that accusation. So that's how verse 13 is going to tie into a lot of what we're talking about how he was crafty and how he handled some things. Basically, he's saying, "I was aware of what you were looking to try to do. I didn't give you opportunity to do it. I didn't give you the position for myself to be put in for you to do this." So continuing in verse 14. Behold, the third time I'm ready to come to you. I will not be burdensome to you, for I seek not yours, but you, for the children, not lay up for the parents, but the parents for the children. And I will very gladly spend and be spent for you, though the more abundantly I love you, the less I be loved. But be it so, I did not burden you. Nevertheless, being crafty, I caught you with guile. Did I make gain of you by any of them whom I send unto you? I desired Titus, and with him I sent a brother. Did Titus make any gain of you? Walked we not in the same spirit? Walked we not in the same steps? Again, think ye that we excuse ourselves unto you? We speak before God in Christ, but we do all things, dearly beloved, for your edifying. For I fear, lest when I come, I shall not find you such as I would, that I should be found unto you as such as would not, lest there be debates, envyings, wrath, strife, backbitings, whisperings, swellings, tumults. Unless when I come again, my God will humble me among you, and I shall be well. Many which have sinned already have not repented of the uncleanliness and the fornication and lasciviousness which they have committed. So thinking about that statement that he makes about how he, in verse 16, nevertheless being crafty, I caught you with guile. Think about what Paul did, especially, you know, when we look back at chapter 11, he says in verse 8, I robbed other churches, taking wages of them to do you service. Why? Verse 9, when I was present with you and wanted, I was chargeable to no man. For that which was lacking to me, the brethren which came from Macedonia supplied. In all things I kept myself from being burdensome unto you, and so will I keep myself. So think about Paul and his reasoning, and then when you look at verse 12, what I do, I will do that I may cut off occasion from them which desire occasion, that they may be glory and found even as we. So Paul all along, what's he doing? He's manipulating the situation. He is certainly authorized to be supported, and they should have. They should have supported him. They shouldn't have allowed him not to be supported. But he knew that, hey, in this situation, you're going to use this for the harm of the gospel, not just Paul's own personal harm. So he was crafty in how he went about handling things. Crafty in how he sent Titus and the other brother and didn't allow them to be quote-unquote burdensome either. Think about what it takes to think like that. To be able to be wise enough to look ahead and say, here's how even an authorized measure can turn out for wrong. So I'm going to skirt it. I'm going to avoid it. I'm not going to give the situation the opportunity to arise. That's really the point of my lesson. How we at times need to be crafty so that we don't allow opportunities to arise that will produce evil. Not crafty in a lying, deceptive, dishonest way. Crafty in the sense that we're trying to avoid a situation from occurring. Trying to keep a situation of bad from happening. I'll give you an illustration that you think about. There, we one time had a congregational discussion. And in that discussion, Judy said if somebody sinned, she wouldn't necessarily want to know about it. You know, I remember that she said that. And I know that now. So if, for example, let's just say a brother or sister in this congregation said, you know, I'm going to come before the brethren today and confess that I've done A, B, and C. And it's not a public sin. And they don't have to do that. They don't have to make it right. And maybe they come up here, and I have absolutely no way to prevent it from happening. And I'm sitting there and I'm talking to them, and they say, hey, I've done A, B, C, and D. I need the brethren to know about it. I'm going to look at them and say, but there's some brethren in here that don't want to know about it. And I'm going to manipulate this situation. I'm going to tell them, this is what God requires that you do. You need to confess that you've committed a sin. Nobody knows that you've done it except me and you now. It can stay right there. Of course, God. It could stay right there. There's not a need for everybody to know what you did because there's some of our brethren that don't want. And maybe they respond and say, hey, But I need help. And for me to get the help that I need everyone to know what you did. I'm going to look back and I'm going to say, no, you don't need everyone to know what you did. Let me help you find the right brethren or the right sisters to talk about this situation that can help you and won't be hindered by what you're about to say that you have done. That's being crafty. That's manipulating a situation. We had a brother here one time. I knew he was hypercritical of everything and everybody. And he would ask me questions and I would just look at him and say, I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to tell you because it would hurt you. I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to discuss it with you. You can't handle it. And sometimes he'd get offended by that. And there were one time where he said, I think you're covering up for people. I said, you're right, I am. Yep, sure enough. Take it to the brethren. I'm not ashamed of that. They don't need to know what happened in this situation. And that was before I knew Judy didn't want to know about something. But I'll tell you, if you know, we talked about in Bible class, that illustration. If somebody had an online affair and they haven't committed the act of fornication and they're going to stop it and they need a couple of brethren to talk to, I know there's more than just Judy sitting in this room that don't want to know that they did that. I've had discussions with some of my brothers and sisters in this congregation where they said, I'd have a hard time not thinking of that every time I look at this particular person. So if it's not of a necessity that information be known, once that person confesses and repents, it doesn't exist anyway. It's gone. It's washed. It's not a problem any further. There's no need to bring that out. And thus, sometimes somebody might ask a question, hey, do you know how brother or sister so-and-so is doing? And my answer might be very generic. It might be, as far as I know, they're doing good right now. Don't ask me any more questions. Don't pursue it. And that's the way sometimes, and I'm giving you all kinds of illustrations, that's the way sometimes you have to be willing not to create a greater problem than what already exists. Man, could you imagine if one of our men had that problem and then, you know, gets up here to pray and you got some of the women in the congregation that during the prayer just thinking, this guy just did this or this. That takes some time to get over. And now there may be times where, and we've seen that in this congregation, where something has to come out public because it is public. And someday somebody could find out about it and then it would be, you should have said something. But we're talking about something that's not. Something that's not there. So be careful. You know, I'm trying to be careful, especially because I record these lessons and sure enough to get somebody later to say, so you're saying brethren ought to hide their sins from one another. What about confess your faults one to another? Hey, I know James 5:16. That doesn't apply to every situation. And it doesn't fit every situation. There's other scriptures that regulate how we handle James 5:16 and other passages. The worship assembly is not time for everybody to come forward and confess the things that they've done that are sinful unless they need to. And you don't always have to. Well, it says so in James 5:16. Well, I've just given you examples where it's not right to do that. What about the instruction not to cast a stumbling block before your brother or your sister? You're just going to throw that out the door, aren't you? You're just going to disregard it completely because you've got one verse you want to hinge on. We've got to be wise in how we handle situations. Not just the government, not just persecution, but even the things among the saints sometimes that we need to be aware of. You know, Jesus thought this way, had a mindset of awareness. You know, He had a time to die and times not to die. I think we recently discussed part of this in a Tuesday class. But in John chapter 7, just look at the first 10 verses. It says, after these things, Jesus walked in Galilee, for He would not walk in Jewry because the Jews sought to kill Him. Now, Jesus later said He ever spake in the open, John 18:20. But what's He doing here? He's concealing Himself. He didn't hide the truth, but He knew where not to go. What? Any an example for us to learn from? Now the Jews' feast of tabernacle was at hand. His brethren therefore said to him, Depart hence and go into Judea, that thy disciples also may see the works that thou doest. For there is no man that doeth anything in secret, but he himself seeketh to be known openly. If thou do these things, show thyself to the world. For neither did his brethren believe in him. So look at how they're pressing him. They're pressing him, right? So Jesus said to them, My time is not yet come, but your time is always ready. The world cannot hate you, but me it hateth, because I testify that the works thereof are evil. Go ye up to this feast. I go not up yet unto this feast, for my time is not yet full come. When he said these words, he said to them, he abode still in Galilee. Now if you continue to read, he eventually goes. But he doesn't concede to his brothers. He doesn't go openly in a way that he's going to get arrested and killed. Let me show you another one. Acts 23. Paul is on trial. In Acts 23, he's on trial. I'm going to start at verse 1. Paul earnestly beholding the council said, Men and brethren, I have lived in all good conscience before God unto this day. And the high priest Ananias commanded them that stood by him to smite him on the mouth. Then said Paul unto him, God shall smite thee, thou whited wall, for sittest thou to judge me after the law, and commandest me to be smitten contrary to the law? And they that stood by said, Revilest thou God's high priest? Then said Paul, I wist not, brethren, that he was the high priest, for it is written, Thou shalt not speak evil of the ruler of thy people. But when Paul perceived that the one part were Sadducees and the other Pharisees, he cried out in the council, Men and brethren, I am a Pharisee, the son of a Pharisee, of the hope of the resurrection of the dead, am I called into question? And when he had so said, there arose a dissension between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the multitude was divided. What did Paul do? He was crafty. He was wise. He knew, hey, one way I can get out of trouble here is pit these guys against themselves. And it worked temporarily. When we look at the way Jesus worked, the way Paul worked, when we look at the instructions about wisdom, when we think about being aware of situations, in Colossians chapter 4, verses 5 and 6, it says, Walk in wisdom toward them that are without, redeeming the time. Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that ye may know how you ought to answer every man. How? If there's 10 right ways to go about something, you know what you ought to find? The wisest one of those 10 ways to go about it. Well, that definitely will mean discernment. And we're not talking about, just to be clear, we're not talking about becoming deceptive people or people that are malicious. We're talking about understanding situations and how to appropriately handle them. To walk in wisdom, to be able to know how to answer a person or a particular situation. It's a very broad subject. I could probably preach on for hours and hours and not cover half of the things that we might go through. But to come back to, hey, we're going to be shut down because of COVID, we may have to change where we assemble every first day of the week. One time when we were going to meet at a brother or sister's house at the time, there was a person that might have wanted to assemble. And I told him, I said, hey, if you want to assemble with us, you let me know. And I'll tell you where on Sunday. Why'd I wait? Why didn't I tell him Wednesday, oh, we're going to be at this address or whatever the case may be? I didn't trust him. And he wasn't a faithful brother in Christ. So I wasn't going to give him the information that if he wanted to somehow bring trouble upon us, that he was going to be there. I didn't lie. I said, yes, we're going to assemble. And he said, at the building? I said, no. But I didn't tell him where. I handled the situation wisely. And since he lives a street up from me, I also watched in my rearview mirror when I left the neighborhood. And some people would say, you're being a bit paranoid. Maybe. But I understand the world that I live in. Do you? And I know that there are people that for no other reason than they get a kick out of it will do some things. I know that I have some neighbors that would call the police on us for meeting at my house if we were, just because they're not allowed to have their get-togethers. They wouldn't do it because they have a problem with what we're doing. They would do it out of spite, and they wouldn't talk about it. And I know that because one time I was emptying my swimming pool. I didn't know that you could not allow... Did you know that... Maybe I'm about to inform you something. Maybe I shouldn't inform you because ignorance is bliss in this regard. But there's a certain city law that meant I couldn't let my pool empty the way that I let... I was completely unaware of. It's like rainwater and everything else goes... Well, I was unaware. And there could be a steep fine. I can't remember what it was. I know it took my breath away. But I think it was like 6 o'clock in the morning. And the fire department's at my door. And they're threatening me with a fine. And we don't have a swimming pool anymore. But it was just one of those above ground Walmart pools. Like, are you kidding me? I can't believe one of your neighbors called. And the fireman basically was telling me, we're only here because of that. You know, we're only here because somebody called. So I know I've got some of those types of people in the neighborhood. And they're the nicest people. I know who it was. The nicest people. And every time I see them, it's, hey, Brian, how are you doing? And blah, blah, blah. And hey, here's a Christmas card. And, you know, how's your family and everything else? How's Taylor doing? And blah, blah, blah. But I know if we were to assemble at my house, contrary to a city ordinance, it'd be doo-doo-doo-doo. I'm watching these people across the street. And then they'd be like, hey, what happened? I saw the police was at your house. I know that. I'm aware of that. I function with that awareness. You ought to be aware of what's going on around about you and how to work in those situations. I want you to think about this in a balanced sequence. In Romans chapter 16. Romans chapter 16 verse 19. Says, for your obedience has come abroad unto all men. I am glad therefore on your behalf. But yet would I have you wise unto that which is good and simple concerning evil. We want to be, when we're talking about this wisdom that we're going to use, we're talking about the usage for godliness, not sinfulness. I'm not trying to get you to think in a crafty manner so that you can go out and do something wrong, but that you might uphold that which is right. We're not talking about manipulating situations, but the kind of wisdom that is right and acceptable. When you read whole chapters of the book of Proverbs, write Proverbs 2, 1 through 20 in your notes, and I'll trust that you can go back and read it, but I think most of us are familiar with the words of wisdom in the book of Proverbs. The wisdom that God teaches us, it takes us away from evil. Doesn't put us into it. Takes us away from evil. So when we're talking about using wisdom in this lesson, like Paul did, like Jesus did, whether you're talking about Paul with the churches in Corinth, what happens if they're able to say, you're only preaching for money? Well, they've already said he's weak in speech and he has a contemptible manner about him. He's not a good preacher per se. Among other charges, he's carnal, etc. Now you're doing it for money. So he says, I'm going to be wise. I'm going to take this away from you. I'm not going to put myself in a situation where you can make that charge against me. You know, I employed that years ago. Harold might remember this. There was a false teacher when Harold lived up he lived in Michigan, but the congregation was in South Bend, Indiana, right there on the border of where he lived. There was a false teacher up there, and I went up there to deal with that false teacher and the congregation, trying to keep the division that had happened from happening. And I wouldn't take a penny from anybody. I wouldn't even let anybody buy me a cup of coffee. Anytime I went, somebody would say, I was like, nope, I'm not letting you do it. Nope. Because I didn't want to be chargeable that you're just coming up here to try to get money or you want to be the next preacher in this congregation. I was aware of the situation and the type of people that were involved in the situation. So I gave them nothing. I didn't give them anything that they could charge. I stayed away from anything that they could bring about. And I learned that from Paul. I learned that from these examples and where to go and what stay away from. And when I went and visited members of the congregation, I took multiple people with me. Where did I learn that from? You know, not to be alone, to bring witnesses, because I knew it could be said later, no, he said this, or whatever the case may be. When I went to the false teacher's house, I took pictures because, yeah, here he is looking out his window, but he wouldn't answer the door. So I wanted that to be there. I'm sitting there talking on his answering machine. Angela, Antoine, I see y'all looking at me at the door. I can hear my voice through your kitchen window on your answering machine. Would you please open the door so that we can talk? But I had witnesses too. Didn't want any of that to be out. Because from Paul, I learned that when false brethren can attack the messenger, they'll do so to discredit the message. Now, you can't always avoid everything, but as much as possible, take away that opportunity. So, not learning the way of sin, in the context of spiritual gifts in 1 Corinthians 14:20, because Corinth was abusing those spiritual gifts that they had, he said, "Brethren, be not children understanding. Howbeit in malice be ye children, and understanding be men." We need to have a childlike innocence when it comes to maliciousness. But we need to have the ability to be crafty. We need to have the ability to understand how to manipulate situations. At the same time, when we're talking about awareness, we don't want to be ignorant of Satan's devices. 2 Corinthians 2 and verse 11. And in that context, Paul was instructing the congregation in Corinth about forgiveness and how their lack thereof could constitute and create a problem. If a brother repents, you got to forgive him. Why? Because what happens if you don't? We don't want to be ignorant of the things that are used in this world for evil. We want to know how to use the right to get around them. Now, when we're talking about wisdom, that doesn't mean our own wisdom, does it? Like we're looking at. We've got examples of how Jesus was crafty, how Paul was crafty. So when we're looking at any subject matter, we want to say, how did faithful people handle this situation that I'm in right now? How did they do it? So I don't want to reside in my own wisdom. I don't want to think about my own wisdom. And the Bible warns us if that could be a whole lesson in itself, right? Your own wisdom. We could go on for hours about that. But in passages such as Isaiah 5 and verse 21, "Woe unto them that are wise in their own sight and prudent in their own eyes." We don't want it to be our wisdom. And we know that the wisdom of the world is foolishness with God. 1 Corinthians 3:18 and 19. So not worldly wisdom. So we're not going out and buying some kind of book on how to use reverse psychology on people to be able to manipulate situations or whatever the case may be in that. We just want to look at the Scriptures. How does God teach us to be wise? We want to think about well-known, kind of what we've been studying in our Bible studies. What happens if I trust in my heart? Doesn't the Bible call me a fool? Proverbs 28:26. So I don't want to say, well, I don't feel that this is wrong, so I'm okay to do it. Oh, the IRS asked me to file my taxes, but we had a lesson on being crafty and I don't want to pay taxes this year. Well, no. The Lord commands us to pay taxes in Romans 13, 1 through 7. So no. We're not talking about being crafty with the IRS. That's using the skill set that we're providing the Scriptures for sin, not for good. No, we don't want to do that. Well, I feel in my heart that the government should going to waste my money. I can't tell you how many times I've had this discussion with people that profess to be Christians. How can you pay your taxes when the government's going to use that money for abortion? the same way that the Lord instructed the church in Rome to pay their taxes when the Roman government used that money to persecute Christians. That's how. Something worse than abortion? Persecuting Christians. No, we're not going to manipulate for evil. We're not going to do something that constitutes wrong. If the police ask you a question, not telling you to lie or anything of that regard, but know how to answer. Know how, hey, where are you going? I'm going to the grocery store. Truth. I'm coming from the grocery store, and the evidence is the groceries in the bag, or whatever the case may be. Truth. But what you've done is you've given yourself a lawful reason to be out of your house. You've given yourself something to do. Some denominational church, I don't know the whole story, but some denominational church, just by saying that, you know, they're not God's people. But they were out, I think it's in California. You could look in the news. I can't remember the exact thing. I just read a very brief headline. But there's some church somewhere. How's that? Where they're closed down churches, but they're allowing strip clubs to be open. So he turned their church into a strip club. He took off his tie on Sunday morning. There's your craftiness. There's your craftiness. I wouldn't do that, and I wouldn't go on the news and tell somebody I'm doing that. And I'm not saying that that's an approved example to follow. Not suggesting that it's the right way. But I'm telling you that the law couldn't do anything to him that Sunday. Now, we know, I don't know how that all turned out. It was a publicity stunt. It was all to be seen of men, like as is condemned in Matthew 6, 1 through 15. It was look at us, blah, 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 blah. I don't know how that turned out. For us, we can follow the Bible examples, like we brought up earlier. They met discreetly. They went from house to house. We could go from house to house. We wouldn't be able, maybe we'll meet this week. Maybe we'll meet here this week. Maybe we'll drive out the Red Sands and meet out in the open where if the city had a regulation that the county didn't. Though I think it's going to be the other way around most often in our situation. Who knows? I think we got a new mayor coming up, so things could get wet, better or worse. Who knows? But we need to be aware. In all these things, before I do it, I need to test it, right? Prove all things, hold fast that which is good. 1 Thessalonians 5:21. Okay, I'm in a situation. I think I need to be crafty. How am I going to be crafty in this situation? Am I being honest or am I outright lying? Am I being crafty? What's my goal? What's my motives? Can I find scriptural authority for what I'm about to say or do? The way I'm about to say or do it. So don't take this lesson and think this is some kind of blanket. I can go out in the world and be a deceptive person. No, you need to have a situational awareness and apply the things that we always live by. Doing all things by the authority of Christ. Colossians 3 and verse 17. But there are situations where we see examples and instruction about using craftiness, being slick or sly about something. And that saints did that in a faithful manner. Jesus did that in a faithful manner. But when it comes to wisdom, before I start wrapping this lesson up, I don't want to just make it, you know, that's a broad subject, right? But when we think about how we ought to handle situations, we're not just talking about how to lawfully be slick to stay out of some kind of sinful or harmful situation. But doesn't godly wisdom teach us how to operate in every avenue of life? Now, for example, we're all aware that the Bible tells us if any man will not work, neither should he eat, right? 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 10. There are other instructions. I think it's Ephesians 4, 28. Says, let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands, the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. So we know We know the instructions are there to work, to provide for our families. But what's godly wisdom teach us about how we might choose our workplace, how we might choose a career path? You know, if you're looking at somebody in high school, for example, they sit down with a guidance counselor. What are some of the things the guidance counselor focuses in on? What do you enjoy doing? How much money you can make? What kind of education you have to go, because the main goal is to get you to go to college. What do you want to do? As we're listening to the world talk to us about things like that, what are we doing as we put them through the Scriptures? Where is that going to put me with the Lord? What if I go down a career path where I'm going to be required to potentially move somewhere where I can't worship with faithful saints? Doesn't the Bible teach us to count the cost of discipleship? Luke 14:25-33. Look back at this, at that context. I know we all know it. There have been several times where I haven't had you turn today because I know you know it. I know you know the Scriptures that are there. But I want you to think about the particular wording that Jesus used, because Jesus is teaching about counting the cost of following Him, whether you're willing to forsake all that you have. But look at the illustration. Verse 28. Excuse me. For which of you, intending to build a tower, sitteth not down first and counteth the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it? That's one of the examples he used here. If you're about to do something, you want to make sure that you think it through, right? So that's a principle that we as Christians should fully understand, because we should have learned it before we became Christians. So I've got to use godly wisdom. I know if I go and I sign up for today's U.S. Army, I know I'm not going to be staying in El Paso, Texas. I might be across the globe somewhere. I might be here for 6 months, there for 6 months, and there for 6 months, and then here for 2 years. And I know I'm going to sign a contract that puts me there for 4 to 6 years plus, depending on whatever they sign. And I also know when I'm talking to the recruiter, I'm talking to a person of the world. And they may tell me that they can guarantee me a location, but after I'm in, that doesn't matter one bit. You can't go and say, "But my recruiter said," but your contract says you belong. You're a property of the United States government. So I'm not going to make this decision. I need to have the Lord first in my life. I can't take a job that requires me to contractually have them first in my life. Then you're even going to think, and then if I have a family, what kind of a husband or father or wife or mother would you be if you're deployed 12 to 18 months at a time? How are you going to carry out your obligations to your family? How is the father going to bring up his children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, Ephesians 6 and verse 4, when they see him every once in a while on Skype, and that's the extent of the relationship for a period of time? Ask the men in here that have been deployed how hard it is to reacclimate to a family after being gone for a year or longer. Ask Bill how hard that is to come back home. Ask Sam how hard it is to be mom and dad, and then have dad come home and he thinks he's going to just assume that role again, but things have changed and the situation's changed and the relationship has changed. And that's hard, isn't it? It's hard to reacclimate and when you count the cost and you use godly wisdom, you do all that before you make that decision. You don't make that decision. You're not entering into whatever job or situation that entails or so forth. And the world's going to tell you, but this is a good career. This is a way to make money. Well, in Matthew 16, again, passages we're familiar with, verses 24 through 27, said Jesus unto his disciples, "If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me." This is what I need to do before I become a Christian. it's not about me anymore, Lord, it's about You. He goes on from that, "For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever will lose his life for My sake shall find it. For what does a man profit if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man shall come in the glory of His Father with His angels, then He shall reward every man according to his works." So if I've counted the cost of discipleship, that's going to affect all of my career decisions. Where I live, how I go about things I'm doing in my life. Hey, maybe somebody would say, "I'd like to live in the hills," or "I'd like to live close to the ocean," or "I'd like to live in, you know, the forest, way out from anybody else." I've been there. That's pretty hard, by the way, when you have to drive 30 minutes to a grocery store. But some people like that. Some people like that. But then you have to ask yourself, what kind of relationship with God am I going to have? What kind of relationship with God's people am I going to have in this choice? And think it through. It takes foresight. Have you ever thought, now, we know there's a balance here. None of us can guarantee tomorrow, right? It's sinful to boast of tomorrow. James 4:13-16. That's wrong. At the same time, counting the cost is about looking forward. So the idea is, if I'm going to be alive 5 years from now, how's that decision I'm making today going to affect me, my relationship with God, my family, my brethren, etc., 5 years plus from now? I'm making this choice, but how's that going to go about it? We have to use godly wisdom in handling that particular thing. And that comes back to, he that handleth a matter wisely. Maybe right now this is a great decision, but 5 years from now? I want you to think what happened in 10, 12 years ago. People were getting home loans where they were paying very low payments at first. They were only paying interest at first. But then all of a sudden there's a balloon payment due. And the housing market crashed because of all the foreclosures. You know why? People saw, I can get a $200,000 house for a couple hundred dollars a month. But they didn't look down the road. That payment comes due. They just thought, in the immediate, I can get this right now. Well, that payment came due, and a lot of people lost a lot of things because they didn't think ahead. Think ahead. Count the cost. Put a budgetary mindset to your decisions, not just financial, all of them. Thinking about them, you know, where is it going to lead me? You know, not all of us have had that kind of wisdom, nor were taught to use that kind of wisdom. I was a young man. I was strong. Worked for a brother in Christ delivering portable toilets. I could deliver them by myself. It was normally a two-man job, so I got paid more money. I thought in the immediate. I never thought about what was going to happen when I ruptured two discs in my back and that thing fell on me because the bed of the pickup truck broke. Never thought about that. I was just thinking the immediate. I'm making good money. I can do this job. It's great. Don't have to deal with people anymore. Working for a brother in Christ, helping him build his company. We're going to go up in this thing together. That was the longevity side of that. But I didn't think about the physical effect of the labor and what I was putting my body through at that time. How many of us can relate? I know every time I step on the floor in the morning, can't feel my feet. I remember how I didn't think about that however many years ago that was. I didn't think about that decision long term. I just thought in the immediate. Had I weighed what that was going to do to my physical body? Well, listen. Learn from those of us that didn't use that wisdom. That when you look forward, the things you do in your life impact you down the road, and ultimately on the judgment day can have an eternal impact. Now I want to come back. That's the broadness of wisdom, and we could go on and 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 on about that. But I want to come back to kind of the heart of what I was really getting at in this lesson. There's a time to be shrewd. There's a time to be crafty. And so I'm going to conclude with a passage. It's in Proverbs chapter 13, verse 16. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 16. And kind of define the terms for you here. Every prudent, and that word prudent means subtle, shrewd, crafty, sly, sensible. It's Strong's number 6175. Every prudent or every subtle, shrewd, crafty, sly, sensible man dealeth with knowledge. That word knowledge, Strong's number 1847, means discernment, understanding, wisdom. But a fool layeth open his folly. Think on that. Think on that. It's a powerful passage. It's a great explanation of handling a matter wisely. You don't have to go into harm's way. You can avoid it. And there's authorized ways to do that. You can do it. You can think about it. It comes from godly wisdom. Who better to learn for how to handle a matter wisely than he who has infinite knowledge and wisdom on all matters? So when you're facing things in this world, think about that. Think about it. Don't just go through the motions. Put some thought in it. Those decisions and the way we handle things can impact us. Let me give you an example. A touchy example. COVID-19, the government wants everybody to get tested as frequently as possible. Right? You hear those messages? Get tested, get tested, get tested, get tested. Are you aware that there are false positives and false negatives? And you know what happens if you get a positive test result? You're quarantined for 14 days. Well, the CDC has come out and said 10. You know what El Paso County wants? The names of everybody you've been around. You know what that means going to happen to them? They're going to be quarantined 14 days. What if you got a false positive? We're not talking about you might legitimately have passed on COVID to somebody. Not talking about that. But what if you feel fine and you're no symptoms at all and you're what they call an asymptomatic person? Why don't you look around the room of the people here, some of whom have to go to work, and ask them how it would impact them if you gave their name. How it would impact them. That they have to be quarantined. Have you ever thought about that? Ask Bill how he'd feel having to take a couple weeks. Now he might like the couple weeks off work, but what about if he loses pay? And I don't know that he would. But think about the impacts of the things that we go through. And then what if you didn't even have COVID? What if nothing? It was just a false positive. Then what if some of our brethren, like Trey, he would have to take a false or a negative test result, right, before he's allowed to go back to work? Well, how's that going to make his car payment? And what if he gets a false positive? And what if there's a string of false positives? It would be terrible if any of us got COVID. Terrible. Maybe Judy had it. She doesn't think so. Probably not. But the consequences of the decisions, you know, you don't have to give everybody's name. You could call somebody and say, hey, I got tested positive. You might want to get tested without having them have to go into quarantine. You could do that. You don't have to make them have to take weeks off work, because some of our brethren here would have to do that. They would, and then they would have to prove to their employer. I think Scott recently had to prove to his employer. That wasn't fun, was it? Had to prove that he could go back to work. There's a lot that we're going to go through in life that we ought to think about before we act. In addition to that, If one of us got COVID and our names get given to, you know what we're not going to be able to do for 2 weeks? We're not going to be able to assemble anywhere because we're all going to be quarantined to house. What if that happened over a false positive? Think with wisdom. Please don't give my name. If I feel bad and I have a fever, I will call you and I will let you know, and I will not be here if I have a fever. I'll stay home. I would do that whether it was the flu or whatever right now. I'll stay home. That's what I'm choosing to do. I'm not telling you what to do. If I don't feel good, if I had a sore throat, I'd be like Liz. I'd be wearing a mask. If I didn't have a fever, I'd still be here, but I would be keeping more distance and I'd be taking care. You can see people in this room are acting with wisdom. We can handle situations like that. But that's just an illustration. And I'm gonna go back to what Calvin said. That's just my advice. That's not a command of God. This is 1 Corinthians 7 point. But there's going to be some of our brethren that are greatly affected if they get quarantined for 14 days. For me, it's just going to mean I can't teach people for 14 days. But I won't have to show a negative result to get back to work. But some of the people in this room will go through great hardship because the county shut them down. And man, are they all over contact tracing. And then they got your name and you've been a COVID person. How might that play out going forward? Think. The world we live in right now is chaos. Don't contribute to it if you don't have to. That's my advice. That is not a command of God. I'm exercising the 1 Corinthians 7 principle of Paul. But there's wisdom in thinking things through. Now, if you've got all the symptoms of COVID, you're sick and you get a positive, yeah, whole different situation. I hope you catch that. I'm not saying, you know, ignore reality. But if you feel fine and for some reason get tested and nothing else, be wise enough to know everything they've said about COVID has changed about as often as you should change your underwear every day. But what hasn't changed is they want to lock down people. And that could have a lot of results. So going forward, I don't mean to make this about COVID. It's just the clearest, most present example. But going forward, just think things through. I kind of have stopped giving invitations because it's almost pointless. Everybody in here knows. Everybody in here that has obeyed the gospel, and those of you who haven't, if you want to, we're here to help you. The water's actually ready. It just is cold. But you've heard so many times what you have to do to become a Christian. I don't keep saying it over and over again. But if you have questions, like always, stick around. I'll study with you as long as it takes. But I'll turn over to Scott in page number 26.